a bold karaoke song just because you really have
it. Such a good song. Oh, yeah. Couple vodka sodies deep, you're hitting the chorus. Yeah.
Are you?
Because,
yeah, this part is good. Like, easy. Like, and it's a pump up. Like, it's such a good build. It's such a good build song. Yeah, you're right. I gotta tell you, when you're right, you're right. And that is an all-time karaoke song.
Like, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Losing their minds in the bar when you do that one. Like, if you can crack that out, because that's one of the keys to a good karaoke song is a chorus that everyone wants to sing with you. Mm-hmm. Because the group carries karaoke. That, like, the worst thing is when the pop star goes up there and picks some random hard song to sing.
And you're like, nobody wants this.
They're up there for the third time. Yes, exactly. Karaoke's all for the crowd. All right? It's all for the people. And so that, by the way, that was since you've been gone to the podcast listeners. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast. Leave 5 stars while you're here. You're listening to this hour. You might as well just do it. I ask you for it all the time. So just do it. Just do it. Just do it. But yes, you got to have a karaoke song that people can just get into, that they want to sing with you. That's the true thing. No one cares if you're good at singing. They just want a chorus that they can sing out loud together with you. 100%. Great choice. So,
Thank you.
The text line is open, 590-590. Fire away. This is your block. You get to be the producer. Ailish did ask you a question of just random players. I looked up quickly the Salt Lake City team to see how many Hall of Famers. By my count, I think that there are 5 guys that are not in the Hall of Fame. But I could have them wrong. But, okay. So, the
what
5 guys who... Yeah, I know. What a team indeed. Guy I forgot on the team that I want to add to the random list, Simone Gagné. Because I should have remembered that there were, like, Ryan Smith was on that team. He feels more like a Hall of Famer because he was an Oiler, right? And just so he was such an Oilers guy. He cried at the podium for the Oilers. The only other guy that did that was Gretzky. So Ryan Smith, you almost get honorary Hall of Fame ship because of where you played. And Owen Nolan, of course, the guy who tried to sue the Leafs, just, you know, the dark. I get into Owen Nolan debates with friends still to this day. You know, like, still a polarizing figure in my world of age group of Leafs fans. Just some still love Owen Nolan. Some of you still stand with Owen. I am not a Owen stander. I do not stand with Owen. I would if he would come on the show, but he's denied multiple requests.
Oh, bummer. We have a bunch of texts in. People love to resurface old names from the past. Multiple people, I think 3 or 4 people have texted in. Rob Zaminer, Giancarlo in Etobicoke said that. A lot of people didn't put their names. Kevin from Scarborough. But yes, that name has entered the text line quite a few times, and I had to go look him up. And yeah, that is a random name.
Yeah,
that, I guarantee that I have like 30 Rob Zaminer hockey cards somewhere. He's exactly the tier of guy that you get in every pack of hockey cards, because you don't mind giving away a bunch of Rob Zaminer cards and diluting the market there. You know, you open up your old Beckett book and he's in there at 10 cents, but he's still like a relevant player. Like he had a 50 point season and stuff. So you're not too disappointed. Yeah, he's the perfect hockey card pack filler guy.
Yeah, but he's also
a little bit before my time, unfortunately.
Yes, but but he's also, like, if you want to talk about a team again full of legends, that name on that team, it's not even random at this point, because it's sort of the name that it's like, that's the basic name. No offense to the texters. No offense. But that's kind of the one where everyone points to and goes, Rob Zaminer. Because the 98 team, again, this is something – I like how I acted surprised about the Hall of Famer thing on the 2002 squad, when I wonder if in actuality 5 is actually a high number for non-Hall of Famers on a team. You know, like, because the 98 team is the same thing. Go through 98 and find me the non-Hall of Famers. I think that you would have maybe the same number, 4, 5. You know what's the – yeah, so that, yes, Rob Zamner was the guy on that team, the 98 team, that absolutely stuck out and was the, excuse me, what? Because, yeah, the rest of the team is either Hall of Famer or multi-time All-Star outside, just outside the ballot of the Hall of Fame.
Okay, who else we got here? I think it's Peter Nedved becoming a Canadian in time for the Olympics. Mike from Guelph.
Oh, yeah, 94 Olympics, way back. Yeah, Peter Nedved.
He's a Czech Canadian, I guess. I don't know the story behind that, but he became a Canadian just to make
that's a good one.
In time. That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I just like the idea of who pops in your head first. You know, like who?
Yes.
I love tests like that where it's just, hey, who's the name? What's the name? Yeah, like for me, it was Eric Brewer. I wished it was Simon Gagné.
Five goals in the 94 Olympics.
Oh, damn.
For Nedved.
Good for him.
But he later switched back and also played in the Olympics for what would now be Czechia.
Good for him.
Again, I still don't buy the Czechia thing. I don't. Again, I know that it's. I Googled it, said that they started calling it Czechia in like 2014.
There's no way. I never heard that
word. I know. That's what I mean. It's not true.
I call people what they ask to be called. Ailish gets called Ailish instead of Alish or whatever. They can be called.
No,
Czechia.
But just the fact that they said that they've been doing that for a while is what I didn't understand. I'll call them what they want to be called.
I will never call them Czechia. I'm not with Blake. I will not just call you whatever you want to be called. No, you're the Czech Republic to me forever and always.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me, JD.
How many times do you get to change your name? You get one, and that was it. You changed it. You said it. You're no longer Czechoslovakia. Fine. You're Czech Republic. That's what you chose. Done. That's what you chose. Can't be switching it up willy-nilly. I said, it's like when people introduce themselves to you and then you get their name wrong and then they let you get their name wrong 25 times and then they put it on you 3 years later. No shot.
Is this about me and Kipper?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like Travis Kels?
Yeah.
Travis Kels? You can't be Travis Kels. You're Travis Kelce.
You can't be Travis Kels. And what are you now? Bart? Like, what are you? Bort?
Me? Like, yeah. Yeah, my son is also named Bort.
Yeah.
So, in looking through this new roster and then doing this Olympic look-back exercise, obviously the 2018 Winter Olympics, there weren't NHL players. Only three holdovers from that team onto this one because these rosters skew pretty old. Eric Odell, Matt Robinson, and Maxime Nareau. And then Eric Staal with his third Olympic appearance sneaking in here.
Buddy.
Which was, because I forgot, I mean, he technically...
He's got to be a captain, right?
If you go as a reserve, do we count that as an Olympic appearance?
Yeah, sure. He went. You traveled.
Okay.
Because he had to wear the jersey once.
Yeah, he had one main one, and then him and Spezza were the reserves one year.
Spezza was reserve, huh? I didn't know that.
2006.
It's tough. It's tough when you're a reserve to be on the team. It really is. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you're there and you get it because you were on, especially Team Canada, right? Team Canada, you get to be reserved. You got to have a note for that somewhere on your page, but you're still not quite, right? Like it's.
I did see yesterday that they're allowing the women's team to bring six more players. They're allowed to bring a reserve of six players all of a sudden. They didn't announce that they're going to add anyone else to the roster, but that's a significant change in just the makeup of how the Olympics would go. So I'm waiting for the call, actually. I'm about to do a couple extra spin classes this morning. I'm going to do a couple extra workouts this morning, get a little nimble. Right. Hopefully they'll give you a shout. Hey, you can just text 595-90 if you're going to add me to the Olympic roster. I'm watching the text line. So
is that what you talked about with Brittany last night? Was you were playing code names? You were like,
is there a way for me to get on the roster? Let me know.
You're like, mascot? You guys doing mascots or what? That's like, you guys
imagine having to make that awkward call now, though, of like the Canadian women's team just made three cuts, and then you have to call back and be like,
you're like, hey, we actually want you to come. I know you've just binge drank for about 4 weeks, and you're pretty upset, and you've been skiing and snowboarding, and you're probably beat up, but come on, we'll have you back. Yeah, that's a tough call to make. Okay, so we got a bunch of people saying... Line. Yeah, a bunch of people saying Brian McCabe. Like, I totally forgot he was on the team. Multiple Brian McCabe texts. That's a legend. That's a legendary name, especially Leafs legend Brian McCabe.
Yeah, the old can opener. You had to take it international with a move like that.
Do you think he did any can openers while he was there at the Olympic Games?
Probably.
Look it up.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me. It's not an official.
That's not a stat you can find.
Sorry, I just got a message from our producer. I was right, but were you guys talking about Brian McCabe on the Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's not random
people.
For me. That's not random. That's not
no,
random
but just
at
like
all.
A name that you forget. I never think about Brian McCabe. He doesn't enter my brain.
No, how dare anyone say Brian McCabe? Brian McCabe was deserving that year. Go look at the stats. McCabe put up career years. I'm still mad about the McCabe thing. Canada need like 25 injuries to their blue line in order to get McCabe there that year. That was a travesty. They continued to overlook my boy. I will always love Brian McCabe, even with his horrible facial hair, even with his horrible head hair that he tried to go with the Mohawk guy all the way through. Brian McCabe had a billion goals heading into that Olympics, and they were just like, nope, who's next? Next, 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 next. That's the most forgettable Olympic team ever, by the way. We basically scratched them from the history books. That loss to Russia, just awful, just awful. As if they did that while I was in university, too. Like, peak JD, drinking, watching hockey with the boys, like a big, massive house. Just ruined. Ruined with that team. And part of the reason is that they snubbed McCabe for forever. It was bad karma from the jump. McCabe's not a random Olympic player, all right? This is Toronto. I accept that answer if I lived in, I don't know, Bangladesh. But this is Toronto. How dare you say that he is some random NHL player?
There's four texts with that. Four or five people.
Yeah, you know what? Those four or five people that you gotta scram. You gotta leave town. You gotta leave. You're not allowed to live here anymore. I've decreed it.
JD, I've got your back here. Not only did he play on three world championship teams prior to that point, and like you said, Niedermeyer and Jovanovski were the two that had to that were injured and then replaced by McCabe. And also, like, Robin Regier's on the roster.
Yeah, no, it was just disgrace. Disgrace.
But yeah, that was the year McCabe had 19 goals and 68 points.
Yes, yes.
Pretty good,
yes.
Pretty solid.
Buddy, I remember. I would never forget that. You absolutely kicked sand in my boy's face and disgraced him in an Olympic year. And that's why you lost, is because you didn't respect McCabe. You didn't respect the McCabe season. Everyone was like, oh, the numbers are inflated, blah, 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 blah. All power play, just a shot. No, disgrace. Should have invited him right away. Should have been an A1 call. Robin Regier over that version of Brian McCabe. Get out of here. And those four people who texted, or five people who texted, again, like, I guess who cares if you have to be forced to leave Ontario right now, given the state it's in? But
they're
you
like,
know,
sure,
you still gotta
I'm
leave.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. You still gotta leave. You still gotta leave. You gotta go to Quebec. It's just the way it is. That's where you have to go. Ooh. Quebec.
That's tough. How about Andy Moog playing for Canada at the 88 Moog. Calgary Olympics? Oh, Moog. See, that's about that's, how.
You know what though? That's no. You just hurt my aunt. Right. That's my aunt's favorite
hockey
player. Sorry
to your aunt.
Also. Andy Moog, big
he's got two O's
guy.
Though. You would say Moog. You know what? If you look
no,
at it,
you
it's a Moog.
Wouldn't.
Well, like
but that's how you would read it. For the...
that's how you would read it.
That's no, how you would
we're
read
talking
Moog.
Music
okay.
Equipment for yeah. sure.
God,
oh, I also, don't know that.
a goaltending throwback in that he's just a tiny little guy.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. Andy Moog though. Yeah, shout out my Aunt Brenda, who loves him to death, and like, yeah, that is her number one all-time
really?
Player. Yes. Andy Moog, yeah, legend.
Does she listen to the show? Maybe she'll text him. Maybe that was her,
know,
actually.
Either way, yeah, either way. No, 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 she wouldn't say random. She wouldn't be thinking that he's a random. She'd be thinking that he should have, her take would have been he should have made more Olympic teams, that it's a travesty that Andy Moog didn't lead more Olympic teams, and that we don't have enough, you know, Hasek versus Moog conversations. Do we have anything in the text line that's not related to this topic?
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. Multiple things. Okay, so let me just scroll down to that. Okay. We have Leafs lines questions. This is a tough one from Jesse in Woodbridge. Good morning, all. This line juggling is the Leafs trying to see what they have when Matthews leaves for Arizona in 2 years. Just had to give you that one there, GD, a little shot. But Jason in Toronto says, the worst part of these line combos is that the defense has been struggling. Finally healthy. Why move away from that shutdown third line that has worked so well early in the season? Give me Mikheyev, Kamp, Kasha.
I don't. See, but I disagree with this guy's premise because it's Kasha on the third line. I know Kasha works on the third line. The idea here is not that you have found something that has permanence to it, because I don't think that's what Keefe's doing. I don't think that the permanent solution for things is to have Nylander on a third line. I think this is about different looks, right?
JD, you've gone robot there first.
Yeah, so. JD, your little mic thing just died again. You sounded like... robot.
So,
unfortunately,
Ailish, can you refresh me on which that guy wanted? Mikheyev, Koshine.
He wanted, yes. So, I've lost it in the
Yeah, I mean, you could try to see it. They've only played 9 minutes together. So here's the real secret. So earlier, Eilish, I pulled all the lineup data for any combination of Kampf, Kasia, Engvall, Mikheyev, Kerfoot. And basically any, so of those, there are 10 potential three-man combinations there. Seven of them have played together. And we're talking tiny samples here. Like Kampf, Kasia, Engvall is the only one with a big sample.
It was Mikheyev, Kampf, Kasia, right? That's what I just said to you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just double checking.
So basically any three of those five, you could just pick three. And again, tiny samples, all strong possession stats with remarkably defensive tilted usage. So basically when you're coming up with that third shutdown line, the limited data we have so far says pick the three that don't fit in the top six or the fourth line that day. There's not data wise, and again, tiny samples, but suggests that any three of those five are probably going to be a capable checking line.
I'm back. I love whenever I turn into robot voice. You guys look at me and I figure, oh, I just swore badly on air. It finally happened. They're
it
looking
sounds
at me
ridiculous.
Like, oh my God, I can't. No, but I feel like you guys look at me as though I finally did it. Because one of the things that when I meet people for the first time that or listen to the show, they're usually surprised by how much I swear. I am someone who loves a good cuss word, and I turn it off for radio. I don't know how I can do it, but I do it. I do it. And when you guys give me that face, I knew it would happen. I knew I would have this slip moment, and I have had that slip, and the ops have saved me, but it's been a while. It's been a while since that's happened for me. The only point I was making about it is I want the checking line to be a checking line. I'm not trying to get cute with one of my star players down that lineup, and I view Kasia as potentially one of the team's, I guess star is a bit of a reach, but as one of their best six forwards, one of their most talented six forwards. And so if you're in a big game, you're in a big money spot, I like the idea of having Kasia at least get an opportunity to play up the lineup. Because whenever he's done that, I was originally a person who said, keep things as is. Keep him and Kampf together. The two of them are working. It's a great line. They haven't had that shutdown line. So I don't dismiss that idea or that notion, because I don't think it's a bad one. But when they've played Kasia up the lineup and they've put him with Matthews and they've played him top 6 minutes, he doesn't just look like he belongs. He thrives. He genuinely looks like one of the Leafs' best six players. And I think that there's probably a stronger case for them to bump down a guy like Bunting and certainly a guy like Kerfoot before I'm losing him out of my top six in a meaningful game. Like, imagine the Leafs are in the postseason right now and you ended up playing Kasha fewer minutes than those guys. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the shutdown line is something that most people here in the text line are a little bit hesitant about moving off of, because it has been really effective especially shutting down defensive minutes, and the D have been a weaker part of the Leafs lineup, so having something that you can rely on. But you know, they put them in the blender, so we'll see. Okay, so this is a question a little bit about the defense as well. This is from Eugene in Woodbridge. This is from Johnny and Markham. Hi team, you make great points. Yeah, I'll get to Eugene next. Sorry, there's just two beside each other. You make great points. Can you tell me why teams don't switch to more defensive lines or defensive alignment like they do in other sports like baseball or basketball? As in, purposely change line three to defensive roles with the senior shutdown of geriatric line four when the team has a lead in the third. They picked up Foligno for a reason, so why try this out now. Johnny from Markham.
I don't really understand the question, because teams obviously do that. Like, you put your shutdown pairing on the ice late. You put your best players on the ice late.
Maybe defensive alignment is what he's going for. Like, you just like trap, maybe. Like,
no, I don't. Yeah, I don't really understand the question. No offense, Johnny. You have to. This is something. This is like, I have some hockey pet peeves. One of them is when everyone just yells shoot. You know that, like, every time when it's like, okay, yeah, they're trying to get a good shot. Sometimes shoot applies. And sometimes you can criticize a coach for playing a down lineup player too late in a close game. I totally agree with that, if that's what he's asking. But I also, you know, I have friends, sometimes you'd be watching a game, and now especially, you know, the Leafs have, what was the latest defenseman project that they threw in there?
Dahlstrom.
I'm never going to remember that name. He could play 20 games in a row for the Leafs, and I'm going to be like, what's that one guy?
Well, lucky for you, he wasn't yeah. in the mix yesterday
yeah,
practice.
No,
he's gone.
But, yeah, you're not going to not play Dahlstrom in the final period of a regular season game, right? He's in the lineup for a reason. And I do find it funny, especially given the state of the Leafs' blue line right now, where they've been playing with essentially only one pairing in Brody and Riley, who we said were playing 27 minutes a night just recently, mm-hmm. that they're playing 26, 27 minutes, that whenever one of the other pairings is in the D zone, I get texts from buddies like, why is Keith playing these guys? Like, what do you mean? He can't just play the same two guys for 60 minutes. He's not playing the same two guys for the entire third period. He's got to be able to use those guys. So I think that maybe if I'm reading between the lines, Johnny, that's what you're kind of getting at, is that teams should be more forward-thinking in terms of the way they deploy defenses. But no, like, look at why there are so many statistics that indicate which players start in the defensive zone and which guys do that late in the game and which pairings do that. And in terms of shuffling lines, they do that as well. Like, you do end up in situations where the best players go on the ice to take a defensive zone draw at the end of the game. You put your best face-off person on with other good players who are great at collecting the puck and getting zone exits. So that's absolutely a thing. I don't know mm-hmm. how else to say it.
Here's a good question kind of on that as well. Gary from Saga. Which one of Mrazek, Engvall, Mikheyev, Kampf, or Kasha gets traded for a defenseman? I know we've floated around the idea of like how you can make an attractive package for a defenseman that will actually impact the blue line and will be an upgrade. If I had to choose from those, like Mikheyev is a no for me now, just how he's come out. I mean, Engvall possibly would be someone I would be able to move off of, but
they're all a no.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, you kind of have found some hidden cheap gems with these acquisitions. Like, I just look at the contracts of Kampf and Kasha. Like, they are a steal right now, especially Mikheyev, who's come back. He's on one of the top two lines now. I don't think that I want to get rid of him, but even though he's asked to kind of have maybe a trade out of here, he might be, like, the easiest to move. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't like it.
It's tough with a guy like Mikheyev because, like you said, he's made noise that he wants out. I don't think mm-hmm. even his strong play here and playing up the lineup, like it, I haven't seen any suggestion that, oh, that tune has changed or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But the issue with trading one of these guys is that it's not only, I don't even mean it's a trade issue just from you need cheap guys on the cap. It doesn't open up a ton of cap space for you to bring someone back as well. Yeah. I think if you're looking cap wise, like Kerfoot's maybe the guy just because his cap hits larger. Mm-hmm. But you know, you send out a Mikheyev, you can only bring back a mil and a half or so in a defenseman.
It'd have to be a couple.
Exactly. Or you know, it's a player who's younger, so they're still cheaper, but then you're talking more in terms of asset cost probably. And you have to be really careful with Riley's raise kicking in next year and a couple of your free agents here. You have to be careful about adding long-term salary too, because the challenge we already know is going to be finding the next Kasha, Engvall, mm-hmm. Mikheyev, Kampf guys on the free agent bin who can contribute for, you know, under $2 million. So you get into a tough position there. You don't want to be over married to your guys, you know, and you don't want to be like, oh, he's on a hot streak, can't trade him now. It's a little bit of the Chris Boucher thing where has a good game, don't want to trade him. Has a bad game, he's the trade asset. So it's tough, but there are some cap realities there that would make it difficult anyway.
So you could technically move off one of those guys and mm-hmm. pay in assets to have a team retain salary, but that's likely going to be the outcome anyways. The Leafs' whole premise here is that they're all in, so they're going to try to maximize their best players. They're not going to move pieces off the roster that help the roster. So a question like that, no, you're not losing Kasha. You've already seen that the Leafs like him well enough to put him up in the top six. You're not losing Mikheyev. You already know what he can do for this team in terms of, yeah, all three zones. And the other part of this, though, is that the guys that you all listed are pending free agents. There's not mm-hmm. a team that would want necessarily any of those players because they just have – they're going to get the opportunity to pay them this coming offseason. I'm not sure if Engvall is a free agent, but I think he is. And if he's not, then it's only a year from now. Either way, you're not clamoring to have any of those guys in a trade. Mrazek would be the only one because you'd be trying to downshift in terms of what the backup situation looks like. But we're already looking – at the month of February where he's going to completely establish his import to the team. And I don't see a scenario where the Leafs do something risky like that to save, what, $1 million on the cap and get a far inferior player at a position of that import. Nah, mm-hmm. I don't see it. To me, if they move Mrazek, it's going to be an off-season trade where Jack ends up getting a contract extension. They know that they need to find a cheaper backup, and they move some pieces around. If you make a trade, it's going to be what Blake just said. And that's what I find interesting, and maybe this will be the last thing, and it's something to chew on so we can pivot into something to chew on. But when I
brought
first
to you by
saw
Great
lines,
Canadian Meats. Brought to you
when
by
I
Great
first
Canadian
saw those
Meats.
Lines. Well, no, Blake's got the different thing.
Oh.
But yes, it is brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
All of it is.
When I first saw those lines, that was one of the things that I thought of, was moving Kerfoot down, limiting his role, accepting that, hey, he's had a good year, but not so great that they're not worried about shaking up that line. Tavares has slowed down. The 5-on-5 stats have sort of caught up with them a little bit. If Kerfoot's not in your top six, then you certainly cannot justify the contract. I'm sorry, you can't. Not on this team. Especially not on the wing. So if he's not a center, he's not your third-line center, he's a third-line winger, you can't afford to pay him $3.5 million. You just cannot do it. At some point, you have to move him. And if that's this season, while he's been playing well, and you're not using an asset to get him out the door, but another team might covet him, you're certainly considering this. That's another spot where it's still got to be talked about. You're not moving any of those cheap deals for the reasons that Blake just said, and also that they're better than him at hockey. So that too. But now, let's... So you chew on that, and Blake's got something else for you to chew on.
Yeah, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
This is actually, JD just laid out a good something to chew on there, and he actually mentioned something earlier that sparked something in me. So here's just something to chew on for today, and it's, again, we're going to touch on Raptors throughout the day, especially in the wake and rake a little later. Keep your texts coming in if you have Raptors questions at 590-590. Miles Bridges leads the Charlotte Hornets in minutes per game. He would be fourth on the Raptors in minutes per game. Gordon Hayward, who is second on the Hornets in minutes per game, would be sixth on the Toronto Raptors. So they would only have two guys in the top six in minutes for the Raptors. Despite that, they are owners of a better record. They are right next to the Raptors in terms of net rating, just behind them in something like simple rating system. They're both younger teams. So I guess there's something to chew on here, JD, and you teased it a little bit earlier, is do we have to make an adjustment to the quality of the Raptors when we look at their peers in the standings or by more advanced metrics? Because, hey, they're playing a disproportionate amount with their best players. They have four guys in the top 13 in minutes per game. It is not the same projecting forward. And hey, maybe they play that way for 82 regular season games. But if you look at a playoff series against a team, well, that team has the benefit of we're going to play our main guys more now, and we're going to shrink the rotation, and the Raptors won't be doing that. So maybe, you know, if the Raptors do make the playoffs, if they do finish the season strong here, you might want to keep that in mind and shift your expectations a little bit in a playing game or a playoff series. Just a little something to chew on. We're going to chew on a lot of football stuff after the break. We got our pal Ty Dunn coming on. Few people have had the Aaron Rodgers pulse quite like Ty. So we'll dig into some of that. We'll dig into some of the NFL weekend behind us and the NFL weekend ahead. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Despite that beat, not too many Urkels on this team. Wins aren't low. They were low last night, I guess, for the Wake and Rake. That would have been a better song to come in with on a bad Wake and Rake day. Yeah. Ugh. Still, I can't believe it. We're staying away from college basketball moving forward, guys. We're going to move forward to NFL right now. We're joined by national NFL writer, founder of the Go Long newsletter and co-host of the Go Long podcast, our pal Tyler Dunn. Ty, how are you this morning, man?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. You know who's not doing good, maybe, is Green Bay Packers fans. Tough loss on the weekend.
The best.
You've always had your finger on the pulse of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers pretty well. So I guess, first, how you feeling? But also, are we potentially at the end of Aaron Rodgers as a Green Bay Packer here?
I think so. You know, I know He had a lot of nice things to say all season about Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, obviously, and absolutely Nathaniel Hackett, who he loves, but maybe going to Denver, it seems. I get it, you know, and with Pat McAfee, it was, you know, kind of a weekly fawning over the organization. I just have a difficult time, you know, really, you know, translating that to Aaron Rodgers is going to stay in Green Bay because he says nice things about Green Bay. He said nice things about Green Bay last year. You know, he said he never wants to play the victim last year. And then he played the victim for 7 months. He wanted to publicly embarrass the Packers all offseason. It got really, really ugly. So, you know, maybe we take him at his word that it's not going to drag on and drag out all offseason. But I don't know. I would be surprised if he did this 180 and all of a sudden wanted to stay in Green Bay when it ended even worse than it did the year before, right? It was just a lethargic, ugly, blah game from him, from the team, and it's the same story. So I don't know. I think he either retires, because I think that is real. I think he seriously was considering retirement before, and that would be a way to kind of stick it to the Packers if he does have any bad blood there still. Or I think that the Packers are true to their word. They clearly told him they'd trade him if he's still unhappy. So that's an option too.
See, I'm really glad that you made time for us today, Ty, because, yeah, I remember the article that you wrote a couple of years ago. I've always just thought of you as, yeah, like Blake said, a guy that has an incredible pulse over the situation, who has read the tea leaves on Rodgers extremely well. And, I don't know, man. I just selfishly feel very vindicated by the way that this has played out and the way that I think it's going to play out, which is for a bunch of the things he said. Like, Aaron Rodgers has been so weird and so complainy for so long that I can't imagine this Packers front office going through another offseason of this, right? Like, where the Aaron Rodgers will he, won't he, him trashing people, him trying to play pseudo GM when they're over the cap. Like, when he said that, when he was at that podium and he said that rebuild comment, I thought about being in the Packers front office going, you ass. Why do you keep doing this to us? We give you everything you ask for over and over, and yet here you are burying us again, saying that we're going to rebuild with you. Like, what are you talking about? Look at the composition of this roster. He's just, it's too much, man. It's too much. And I'm surprised to hear you say retire, because I never really thought Aaron would go out this way. I thought that maybe he cares more about his football legacy, but that would be the pushback I would have there, is do you really think he would go out and have his final narrative be, this is a guy who had an all-time complainer season, had the immunized story, and then lost a playoff game at home a couple of years after he lost to this same team that he went, we have to play this game at home, right? Those were the words. We have to play this game at home. 0-4 mm-hmm. in the playoffs against the team that you're supposed to stick it to over the course of your career is quite a bad spot to leave the game. I got to say, like, this is as low as Aaron Rodgers' stock has ever been.
He put everything so perfectly. You know, that's why I agree with all of that completely. And the Packers aren't blameless here, because I don't think that they're sitting in their offices right now and being tough, right? They should be tough. Instead, they're right away, Matt LaFleur yesterday, and I get he's not going to throw anybody under the bus, but I mean, they're right back to saying and doing with everything they did last offseason and basically begging this guy to be a Green Bay Packer. I mean, they bent over backwards for him before. They're going to bend over backwards for him again and do anything and everything possible to cling to him as long as they possibly can, which, great. You know what? He'll win a fourth MVP. MVP awards are nice, I suppose. 14 years as a starter. He's been to a Super Bowl once. He's been a headache behind the scenes again and again and again. I don't know. I mean, if at some point they're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off and move forward, and whether it's Jordan Love or not, I think at some point you just have to kind of turn the page if you're Green Bay and have a backbone here, because, I mean, what else can they do? I mean, at the line of scrimmage, he can do whatever he wants. That's what's kind of interesting, too. The Packers offense catching a lot of heat, and Matt LaFleur is falling on the sword again and again and again for how they played. You know, it's a blend of two playbooks. Rodgers has the autonomy to change whatever he wants up there. So who knows what was really happening? I know the last time they played San Francisco in the NFC Championship game in San Francisco, at one point, Aaron Rodgers just told LaFleur, I got this, and just started doing his own thing. So yeah, I don't know what else he wants, and I don't know why Green Bay is just begging for him to play and be there and be happy once again.
Well, part of it has to be that you don't want your two of your most famous three quarterbacks leaving in acrimonious terms, right? It has to be some of that.
That's like true.
You have to remember the way that things happen with Favre and how there's still a little bit of Favre doesn't feel as connected to the Packers as he should be. And I know Favre's a weird guy just in general, but you never really feel like, at least while Rodgers is there, that it's a comfortable fit having him back in the building or having him be like the Mr. Alumni or one of the faces of the organization. Now you lose that with Rodgers. Maybe they do want to have that. Like, that's 30 years of quarterback play where you're just kind of saying, yeah, neither of these guys really represent us anymore. That's an oddity. But Tua has got to be part of the Jordan Love thing, because I think that organization knows they don't have anything with him. And if he would have shown out against that Chiefs team, if he would have had a game where we're all going, wow, Jordan Love actually looks like he could be a guy, I feel like this would be way further down, that they wouldn't be kissing the ring, that they wouldn't be doing these things, that they would be staying maybe a little bit more silent and stoic. But who knows? Here's one I've got for you, though. Do you really think that Rodgers is the personality type where he could pull the Kevin Durant and join the Niners? Like, say the Niners lose, they don't win a Super Bowl, which is probably the only way that they keep Jimmy Garoppolo moving forward. They did draft Trey Lance, but if we're looking at a trade or a way that they could do this, could you see Rodgers pulling the Kevin Durant?
Definitely. I think everything's on the table. He'd go anywhere, and you know, we all remember him and Mike Tomlin kind of sharing that romantic moment back in September where they played each other. I think he'll go anywhere, and I think going to the West Coast would mean a lot to him, you know, kind of going back to where he grew up. Obviously, though, you know, he's not going to be talking to his family out there. That's still not good. But I think he'd like to get out of Green Bay. I think he'd like to go toward the West Coast. I think there is something there. Maybe it's Denver because it's closer to the West Coast, and he wants to do stuff outside of football. I mean, that's another factor here is when it comes to these decisions, we all think that these quarterbacks are making the decisions through a football lens. But that's Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady is the guy that's obsessed with rings and winning. Aaron Rodgers, you know, a few days before the game is talking to a ESPN about cancel culture and, you know, vaccination status and all this stuff. I mean, I don't know. He wants to do stuff outside of football. He cares deeply about his narrative. I think getting out there to the West Coast too allows him opportunities to do stuff outside of football. Which clearly he's just not as obsessed about the game as a guy like Tom Brady. That's not saying it's good or bad. That's just bad. So I think that's another reason where I could see him wanting to get out of Green Bay. He's been there since 2005. At some point, I think he just got sick of it.
So when you look at Rodgers' career, and obviously the postseason records start to pile up and be a little bit of a blemish, obviously, on how he's done. Gone 9 consecutive losses in the postseason since winning the Super Bowl. 0-4 all-time against the Niners in the playoffs. When you try to evaluate where he ranks, just for you, in terms of quarterbacks, where do you have him? Let's say this is the end of his career.
Man, such a good question. I think he's kind of, I don't know, the comparison I always use, you know, being a big 90s NBA fan, he's basically a Karl Malone, right? I mean, he was living in Tom Brady's Michael Jordan era where Brady's just collecting rings and everybody else is maybe really good. Hey, Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer. He's really, really talented, but he's been to one Super Bowl. He's won a bunch of MVPs, and it's the same old story. Yeah, he's a great regular season quarterback, maybe one of the greatest regular season quarterbacks of all time. But for whatever reason, he'd get into the playoffs, and yeah, you can blame the defense, you can blame the special teams, but if he is a top 5 quarterback of all time, you rise above that stuff, right? Like, you just find a way to rise above the muck around you. And in this game, in this situation, the defense played really well. They held San Francisco to 13 points. Special teams, not so much, right? They did give up that touchdown. But if you're Aaron Rodgers, score more than 13 points at Lambeau Field in a playoff game against cornerbacks who have been roasted most of the season. I don't know. I think that absolutely affects his legacy, to answer your question. I mean, he's probably a top 15 quarterback all time, maybe top 10, but winning in the playoffs, it should matter. I mean, this is where legacies are made. And that's not me saying it. That's Aaron Rodgers saying it.
Yeah, I love this. This is so great. I know I thought I was out on being a Seahawks fan, but all this just piling on Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, nah, I am who I am. Like, this is still great. This is what I've been thinking forever now, man. Like, this guy beat Caleb Haney to go to his one Super Bowl. Like, Caleb Haney. I can't even remember the other name of the guy. Like, what, something, like Collins, the other Bears QB that was there? Yes. It's like Todd Collins and Caleb Haney were what was at the disposal from that Bears team, and they spotted him a 14-point lead, and they still almost blew it. Aaron Rodgers has not been a playoff quarterback. And it's funny because we did this with Peyton so much, right? Was we kept calling Peyton a choker his whole career. Peyton Manning's a choker. He's a choker. Right. He's a choker. Peyton Manning can't do it. He can't do it in the playoffs. He can't do it in the playoffs. At least he was losing to Brady constantly, like, right? At least it was Tom Brady that was in the AFC that was stacking Super Bowl rings, and he was going up against Bill Belichick, for God's sakes. Like, what has Aaron Rodgers done in this NFC? Like, what has been the huge impossibility for Aaron Rodgers to get more Super Bowl appearances? I don't understand what that case is. Like, Tom Brady showed up here year one and got a ring. Year one! And Aaron Rodgers can get there one time and needs it to be Caleb Haney. I love the Karl Malone comparison. I think that's perfect. I can't put that any better than the way that you did it. He's 100% NFL Karl Malone. You add it to the weirdness of Karl Malone and the fact that I think that Carl disappeared from the face of the earth post-career, and I feel like it's going to be the same thing with Aaron Rodgers in the NFL. You think Aaron Rodgers is going to show up for, like, NFL film stuff to talk about play? Like, no chance. He's gone. He's gone, gone, gone. He might do something in Hollywood, but football-related, he's not going to be affiliated with the league at all. There's no chance.
See, that's really interesting, JD, because I've wondered about that. Like, part of me does think he is a chameleon. He is different things to different people, and that it's been that way since Cal. But I think recently he's been so obsessed with how people think of him, even more than he was in the past. I mean, really, he cares deeply about what people think of him, maybe more than much else. I mean, he's told us all season that he wants to take his narrative back, and the narrative means so much. So if that's true, I could see him being on our TV set all the time when he's done playing. I mean, one way or another, whether it's, you know, game shows, whether it's acting. I get it. Maybe football isn't as important to him as a Brady, but if it means that we're thinking about him and talking about him and seeing him day in and day out, yeah, I think he might be doing football TV stuff for a while. It's And he's, you know, very, very smart, and he'll make it clear that he's very, very smart, too. So it's an opportunity to continue to massage that narrative.
One of my favorite things about Aaron Rodgers is how he just loves to let people know how smart he is and how well-researched he is. Just a guy that I hope stays in my life for years and years to come. No, please, I'm good. I've reached my saturation point there. Okay, so we had Nate Geary on yesterday to talk about the Bills. We got to ask you a Bills question before you go. He was pretty down in the dumps, and it is natural for a Bills fan to be down in the dumps after that. I guess I just looked at it as a more optimistic thing where I said, man, Josh Allen is that, and he proved he's that in a massive playoff game. And so you got to feel good about it moving forward. Your salary cap sheet is fine. You're returning a lot of players. You probably have some wiggle room. You're probably going to try to add a couple of things. If it's you, this is kind of a two-parter. One is just, you know, how are you feeling about the state of the Bills in terms of that loss? Because you did lose with Josh Allen playing that way. I get it. Windows in the NFL can be very, very small. But the overall sense of the team. And two is, if you have one off-season priority, what is it?
I think that the segue here is, look, I mean, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, I watching Josh Allen, I kind of flashbacks to Aaron Rodgers' game in Atlanta, the divisional round. I think they won that game, obviously, but he was on an all-time heater. And you watch that playoff game in 2010 and think, holy crap, I mean, he's in his second year as a starter. He's going to be doing this forever. He's going to be winning Super Bowls forever. And as we just said, he's been to one and he's won one, and Josh Allen hasn't been there yet. He looked unbelievable. And if Josh Allen is your quarterback, you're happy you paid him every time that you paid him, and you want him to be your guy as long as possible. But it's just tough. Like, things happen. I mean, there's other just incredible quarterbacks in his own conference beyond the guy who's hosted four AFC championships in a row. So I think it's, I don't know, a day, you know, a week like this,
I get it, being optimistic and think, okay, you got Josh Allen, the future's bright, you're going to have these shots again and again, but it's a lot harder than I think we think it is. In terms of, like, the Bills and what they do next, they might have to replace a lot of people. You know, in the front office, Joe Shane, that's obviously with the Giants. Brian Daboll, he might be leaving. I just saw, a report last night that he might be bringing Ken Dorsey with him, so maybe – Chad Hall is your next OC. There'll be some shuffling internally, and they are going to have to keep drafting well because it's going to be tough to sign guys. You know, at what point does Stephon Diggs just walk into Brandon Mead's office and say, hey, guys, time to tear up this contract. Let's go. I think it might be this offseason. So it's going to get tougher to pay people around the quarterback. But as long as you have the quarterback, yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to have a shot. I just pause to say that they're going to be right back in that same divisional playoff moment with a shot to realistically win a Super Bowl year in and year out, because it's just hard to do.
Yeah, I'm telling Stephon Diggs that your only memorable play was when you leveled a fan in a game.
Right?
Like, get out of my office. Gabe Davis makes $1 million. He just scored 4 touchdowns. So if anybody's coming in the office asking for a torn-up contract and a new one, it's probably that guy. Ty, you're always the best. I appreciate the insight. I know that we all do. Thanks for doing this, man. We'll talk soon.
Always love coming on. Thanks so much for having me. And I imagine next time we do it, as the Rodgers turns, we'll have the saga has now begun. Once again, here we go.
So good. So good. Yes. Put Packers fans through it, Aaron. Thank you so much. Tyler Dunn, national NFL writer, founder of Go Long Newsletter, co-host of the Go Long podcast. And again, someone who has had really great access to Rodgers throughout his career, who's covered him very closely. And so when Ty says things like, I think he could retire, I think he could go to the Niners, that when he said more specifically that everything is on the table for this guy, that is what is going to be fascinating about the Rodgers offseason, is that I believe it. I think that it's like nothing should shock you. Whatever he decides here, it shouldn't shock you.
New Jeopardy host? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Got it.
You can't host Jeopardy if you're going to deny all the science answers.
He'll be like, that's actually not correct.
Yeah. So
I've done my own research. I'm not sure about that one.
Ty thinks, every answer is, I don't know. Who's to say? Ty thinks he's coming back on to talk the Rodgers saga. If Cincinnati flops this weekend, he's coming on to answer for his Joe Burrow crimes, because I hit the peak of my Joe Burrow optimism when Ty wrote a piece at Go Long TD the other week about Joe Burrow is, quote, the most dangerous man in football. I've been on a bit of a roller coaster with Joe Burrow. If he has a bad one this week, Ty's going to answer for those claims. And if Joe Burrow has a really good week and pulls off the upset, we're just going to pretend it didn't happen. And Ty, why didn't you tell us Joe Burrow was coming?